We turn now to the future of a very old book. The Bible has evolved a great deal since King James put his name on the authoritative English language version. The latest generation hits the shelves today. Today's New International Version of the Bible, or TNIV for short, that itself is a revision of 1978's New International Version Bible. The TNIV aims to make the text more accessible to young people and new readers by updating and clearing up obscurities in the language. What does the Bible lose or gain when it's modernized? Is there a phrase you dread to see updated, or one where it's way overdue? Give us a phone call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@npr.org. John Steck is chairman of the Committee on Bible Translation, the group that revised the New International Version, as well as professor emeritus at Calvin Theological Seminary in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And he joins us now from his home in Grand Rapids. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be with you.
Some of the words you updated have changed meaning over time. You used foreign, for example, instead of alien, but saints becomes God's chosen people. How come?
Well, because the English word saints, if you, as it's described in the dictionary, for example, carries connotations which are really not present in the language which we are translating. The terms both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament really refer to those who have especially devoted themselves to God or who have been devoted to God, but applies to all Christians, for example, or in ancient Israel, to all the Israelites, not just to some special people.
So how would you refer in the new version of the Bible to the person that we now call St. Peter?
Well, he's never called St. Peter in the Bible, so we didn't have to contend with that.
All right. Well, is there an example of saint is used in front of a lot of names?
It isn't. It's referred to in general terms to the people of God, to a congregation, but it is not referred to in terms of describing particular names.
I see. All right. There were 12 people on this committee that revised this new edition of the Bible. Were there? I assume there were a lot of changes that people had difficulty agreeing on.
Well, it depends on what you mean by difficulty. There was always the judgment had to be made whether or not a change needed to be made. Mm-hmm. And if it was decided that what we had was not clear enough or not current enough, that raised the question, what do you put in its place? And as soon as you raise that question, how do you say it in English, you can get plenty of disputes and long disputes because the language is a very difficult thing, a very subtle thing, and there's all kinds of nuances and shifts that take place. So we spend a great deal of time debating, how do you say it? How do you say it in current English?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the changes we noted is that I think your old edition said Mary was with child. You now say she's pregnant.
Right.
Why that change?
Well, because if you would go around asking a younger generation of people, what does it mean to be with child, they would seem to be puzzled.
Accompanying a child rather than being with child, I guess.
Could be that.
Yeah.
They simply wouldn't understand it as being pregnant.
And I wonder if you could give us any more examples of some of the things that you've changed and the reasons you've changed them.
Well, for example, one of the common words that occurs both in the Old Testament and New Testament is in the NIV, desert. Well, a desert is a little too narrow a geographical reference for the intent of the original languages. So we have changed virtually all of them to wilderness, which is a broader term, means a place that is not occupied, at least by any permanent residence, and it is not cultivated. And the original terms refer to land not cultivated, not permanently occupied. That could be a desert, but it isn't always desert.
So wilderness, in this case, just being more accurate.
Right.
All right. Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN@npr.org. And we'll begin with Tony. Tony's calling from Battle Creek.
Hi. I actually work with students. I'm a pastor, and I've spent some time talking with students specifically about this issue. I have a Christian school locally that actually did a study on the TNIV compared to some of the other books. So it's been a conversation among students. The thing that I think is interesting to hear from them, as well as just my own thoughts, is I think there's value in the poetry and in the translation of putting the ancient text into contemporary language so long as we don't lose translation in the process. And there have been other paraphrases put out, like The Message and so on, that I think have value. But just my position is I think there's enough controversy around the TNIV that I'm struggling with having absolute confidence in recommending it.
And what's controversial to your mind?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the gender neutrality with some of the passages that aren't as specific with the masculine pronouns, and I've just found that there's enough resistance that I guess because of the question marks, I'm wondering, should I have a question mark as well?
John Steck?
Well, I think the only way you can solve that is to take it in hand and read it through yourself, because whether or not masculine is still functions as generic for the human race depends upon individuals and some local communities. But broadly speaking, across the country, both here and in the UK language tradition, the masculine generic is simply no longer functioning. And so you have to find some alternative ways to express that.
Can you explain why do you think the original NIV committee didn't settle on that when it was first introduced?
The reason we didn't, the matter was raised, but the reason we didn't is because we thought that the experimentation with alternative ways of expressing the generic had not yet settled down. There was all kinds of experiments in all kinds of directions, and nothing had yet crystallized. Now we thought that probably we'd reached the stage that the language had reached a stage where it was settled enough that we could make the judgments.
Just one more follow-up. Do you see that trend continuing, say, 20 years from now? Do you see us holding back on anything right now, and then 20 years from now us, you know, changing the language again?
That calls for a human judgment, which I don't think any human can make. It was our judgment, however, that the language is very likely not to go back. The whole flow of the culture seems to be such that it is against any such return.
Tony, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email we got from Don White on Long Island. I think it's fine to update biblical language, but what about the poetic flow, he asks. Does my cup runneth over become my cup overflows? It seems to lose something in the translation, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a very subjective judgment. Some people... as we found out in our translation project, when you sit down to translate with 12 people, you get 12 different senses of what goes well, what does not go well, what flows, what does not flow, what communicates, what does not communicate, what is open to misconstrual, what is not open to misconstrual. So there's a certain subjectivity about that, and no version is going to please everybody.
There's not many people in the country anymore who would use a verb form like runneth over.
No, that's right.
Does your Bible use it?
No. That's Old English, which has long been given up.
Okay, let's get another caller on the line. And this is Johnny. Johnny's calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if you had gone back to the original verbiage of the Bible. I believe it was the Greek version that was translated into the King James Version. And I understand that the King James Version is as much a political translation as it is a spiritual translation. And I'm wondering specifically...
As what?
It's as much a political translation as it is a spiritual translation, where they were able to change from the original Greek, such as, ye shall not suffer a poisoner to live. And in the King James Version, it was translated to, ye shall not suffer a witch to live. And I'm wondering if you went back to the original words to find out their true meaning.
All translators work from the original language texts. That's what it is to translate. Even when you revise, for example, the TNIV is in many respects a revision of the NIV. But that doesn't mean that we translated for the NIV. We actually worked from the original Greek, Aramaic, and Hebrew texts and tried to render them into current English.
So they did go back to the original documents, it sounds
indeed.
Like.
Indeed. Well, we don't have the original documents.
Well,
we do have copies of the original texts.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Johnny.
Thank you.
An email that goes along with this from Al in Milwaukee. In the Bible original languages, both Greek and Hebrew, he writes, there's no word for wife, only woman is used. Who determines when wife is substituted for woman in the TNIV translation, and what criteria are used?
Well, that's the difference between languages. For example, in the Old Testament, the word that is usually translated husband is translated that only in the context where it's clear that the reference is to a husband. The key, the basic word that is rendered is the common word for man. But when it is indicative of a relationship to a wife, then the English for that is husband. And the same is true with the Greek.
So you use context to figure out what's appropriate where.
All words must be understood in context.
We are talking with John Steck, Professor Emeritus at the Calvin Theological Seminary in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Chairman of the Committee on Bible Translation, about a new edition of the Bible that appears on shelves today. And you are listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And let's get another listener on the line. Emma's calling. Emma's also in Portland, Oregon.
Hi, I have a question for John. My understanding is that this revision is for the sake of the readers, and you gave the example of that most kids that you would ask wouldn't understand what with child means. But I was wondering if you actually asked any children, if you actually interviewed any of these readers, because it seems that you're not only selling short the original text, but also kind of the intelligence of the readers and their level of dedication to actually learning the nuances of, you know, another writing style from another period.
Well, anyone who spends considerable time with the biblical text, even with such an old translation as the King James, will learn how to understand it. But it takes a good deal of work and a good deal of effort. And today's readers are not inclined, particularly new readers, are not inclined to spend that kind of effort to come to understand, for example.
So does this make it easier to not devote the amount of dedication and time that it really is due to the religious text? I mean, is it just making it easier for people to not pay attention?
Hopefully it makes it easier for new readers to come to grips with the biblical text and not be put off with obscure language and obscure imagery. That is our hope, and that it will encourage them then to spend more time with it and to discover things that translators can't help them with. For example, the traditional way in the Old Testament to refer to the worship and service of God is the fear of God. The problem with that is that it comes off to modern readers as simply to be afraid of. So you have to find alternatives, but there are in many places no alternative. For example, in Psalm 34, I will teach you the fear of the Lord. So they do have to learn the language of the Bible in order to understand it fully. But we try to make it as accessible as possible.
As I'm sure you're aware, John Steck, there is controversy connected with this translation. I think it was Paige Patterson, a former president of the Southern Baptist Convention, said the translators had gone beyond trying to clarify meaning.
There has yet to appear a version of the Bible that does not evoke controversy, because different people make different judgments about where the language is, the receptor language, and how to understand the original languages. We've heard the objections from Dr. Patterson and others like him. We've listened to them. We even invited their representatives to sit with us for a while and to express their concerns and their reasons for their concerns. And after hearing them and discussing it, debating it even at great length, we finally came to the conclusion that we simply could not agree with their particular approach to translation and to the languages, or the modern approach to modern language. So we had to part ways with them.
Are some of your critics saying, in essence, look, you're just being too politically correct here?
Oh, yes, that is the main objection. They're saying we're being politically correct. It was not our concern to be politically correct. It was our concern to find out where the language is today, however it got there, and to use that language to translate the Bible, which is what every translator tries to do, to translate the ancient language into current idiom.
Let's see if we can get another caller in. John joins us from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have, in making the changes to the Bible or the alterations to the Bible, I had a concern on two passages. One is Exodus chapter 21, verse 7, that sanctions it sanctions the sale of my daughter into slavery. I wonder if any changes have been made there. And then Leviticus.
John, let him answer. Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, I didn't catch the reference.
The reference is Exodus chapter 21,
yes,
verse 7. It says it sanctions the sale of my daughter into slavery. And I just want
it can't be Exodus 20, verse 7. You must have the wrong reference. But be that as it may, there are indeed passages that do speak about that, but that reflects the ancient culture. And you can't change that in translation. That would be to rewrite the text rather than to translate it.
And, John, quickly, if there's another concern?
My concern is, which parts of the Bible do we pick to live by and which ones don't we?
Now you've asked a question that goes far beyond translation.
And he saved it, and you've only got 53 seconds to answer it.
And there is no way you can answer that in 53 seconds. That is what pastors struggle with every time they go into the pulpit. That's what theologians struggle with every time they take up the biblical text and try to interpret it and say, now how is it to be understood in terms of its current application to the Christian life?
John,
and that is extremely diverse depending upon the nature of the text that you're talking about.
John, thank you for the question and the phone call.
Okay, bye-bye.
And John Steck, thank you for your time today, and good luck with your book.
Thank you.
John Steck is chairman of the Committee on Bible Translation and Professor Emeritus at Calvin Theological Seminary and joined us from his home in Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.